Ladies and gentlemen, on this finally summer afternoon, today we're going to talk about something I'm going to start calling the deep mind. And we're in a family together, right? On this show, that's what we have. If you're a habitual listener, it's because you and I share something. We have deep minds. Now, I don't ever want to say that in the pretense that we're better than anyone else. Some people are tall, some people are short. There are advantages and disadvantages to either classification, right? For those of you with deep minds, you understand that it's a curse, as well as it's a gift. A person who's ignorant might not know that they live in a blissful world because they don't pay attention to all the things that are recognized as either good or bad. But sometimes when they need to program that computer, VCR, radio inside their car, their ignorance becomes costly. They must pay someone else to do it. They never quite feel in control. They fear car repair places because car repair places can figure out how much they know and break the car every single time it goes in. And they're just in this constant dependency. But for us, we're going to push all that aside. Don't worry about any judgments or any of that kind of stuff. And let's just talk about what it means to have a deep mind, and how do we identify a deep mind, and how do we deal with having a deep mind? How do we attain more depth? How do we control the dive, right? None of us wants to go all the way to the bottom of the ocean just because we dove in. But some of us will feel that way, won't we? Now, for some of you, you know, you've had a level of awareness that's been around since birth, and you can't remember not being aware of your surroundings. It doesn't mean your academic intelligence was, you know, at some high level, but you were simply aware that you were alive. You started to see the variables of life very quickly. You will most likely have felt the mortality and frailness of your parents and your guardians. That they were just people too. You may have seen the society that you live in as sort of a crude, one-size-fits-all DMV line that lacked any personality, any personalization. And so you went your own way because you're like, I just can't do it. I just can't stand in line and eat government cheese. I'd rather starve. If you're prone to be in this deep mind arena, then you most likely know that you think differently than other people. Perhaps you have a photographic memory. And I want to make a point here. Photographic memories are misunderstood because people who don't have it or haven't recognized that they have it think that what we're saying is everything's pictures. Like, supposedly you could look at an album cover 10 years ago, memorize it, and then 10 years later you could draw it. That's not what photographic memory means in its most extreme form. It just simply means that in certain metrics of information, it could be numbers, could be letters, could be phone numbers, could be images, could be history, could be mathematics, engineering, all these different things. When you look at something, you completely take it in. And it's not a matter of is it difficult to remember. It is that it is difficult to forget. And that's why if someone feeds you, if you have that talent, if you have that sort of genetic capability or whatever, who knows how it happens, then if someone feeds you bad information, it can be very dangerous because you have a problem forgetting the first impression of that information. You'll hear me say that on the show. And most people, I think, have this anyway, regardless of how intense their memory is. But that sets the foundation for the ability to take in information at an amazing pace. Because instead of taking it in and then pushing it into a storage facility and trying to associate it with things that you have no problem remembering, such that when you think of the Christmas tree, you think of the fire truck, you think of the eggnog, whatever that little chain is, right? It's automatic. It's automatic because it's just what happens to you. Once you have that foundation, the second tier up, that usually is indicative of the mind that can do this, is that you see connections. Most of you folks have seen sort of a neural net map or even a diagram of nuclear fission, where you have one little round dot that separates, there's two lines coming off of it, the two other dots, and then each one of those goes out to two, and so you have this exponential growth pattern. In your mind, you can do this with information, except that each connection from one thing to another is based on sort of a court case, evidence that must be submitted to your mind to make that connection make sense. It doesn't mean you can't connect things that you can't prove. It's just there's a gigantic question mark when you say, I don't know how these two are connected, but they're connected. The third thing that you'll notice inside your mind is that you have an internal clock, a processor, and it is moving a lot faster than other people's clocks. And it doesn't matter how fast you speak, how fast you walk. Some folks I know do gigantic round robins in their minds, and they're super slow physically on the outside, but by God, you could ask them any question on planet Earth. You know, there was a friend of mine that made a joke about the creator of TurboTax, the actual Michael Morgan who invented it. And he's a very tall gentleman and just extremely wise, at least in computers. I don't know him on a personal level. But he, they said, you know, you could ask him what 1 plus 1 is and what the answer to life, the universe, and everything is. And he'll take the same amount of time, which would be a long amount of time, to answer those two questions, and both of the answers will be right. And I thought that was cool, because I've known people like this. But if you do have a rapid-fire mind, without drugs, or I should say, before drugs, what ends up happening is that you start to analyze things on levels that others don't. There's more attributes about something. For instance, for those of you who are just trying to figure out exactly what I'm saying here, because I'm coming at it from different angles, if someone said, you know, what do you think of that house? And you say, oh, it looks really nice. And you go, why do you think it's nice? And you start in labeling things. Well, I love the two-story thing. I love the color. I love the driveway. Each one of those things that you're complimenting about the home is an attribute of the house. And so when your mind moves very, very quickly, you can look at tens of thousands of these things in a very conscious way, not a subconscious way, right? We all do it subconsciously, whether or not we want to admit it or not. I'm not sure that your intellectual IQ has anything to do with your ability to stop your mind from thinking subconsciously. Now, some people get hit on the head or they have, you know, various disorders, and they may or may not lack the subconscious ability to analyze things. But once your mind moves very quickly, and if you have those other two layers, the ability to remember well, the ability to connect things and remember them well, once you start analyzing the world, you'll start living in your own sort of microcosm of cause and effect, of this view of the world. You will live in an enlightened state because at all times, on average, you're seeing more than other people in every little nuance of life. Now, you know, I'll say a little digression here. You know, there are people that will say that everyone has a purpose in this world, everyone has a talent that needs to be exploited, and sometimes you don't find it, and so therefore you don't find your destiny. I think there's probably some truth to that. And I think that for some folks, without any exceptional, you know, memorization talents or those other layers, they do have this ability to see one thing really, really well. You know, that's why we go into professions. A guy who's a body shop guy who fixes cars. You know how these, you have these friends that say, look how the paint doesn't match between the quarter panel and the door. And you sit there and stare at it and you're like, man, I don't see any difference. You're like, oh, come on, it's right there, da da da. They have that exceptional ability to see what you can't see. For whatever reason, they got better eyes, or they just somehow can analyze the data better in that particular realm. So you will always find folks, and I think virtually every human being has a talent like that in a particular category. But a deep mind is going to see it almost all the time in everything that happens. So let's move to the next stage. Let's say that you have these talents. You've got part of this foundation. But for whatever reason, it's not something you've consciously thought about, although you can feel it, and every once in a while it aids you, and maybe sometimes it is your disadvantage because you're overanalyzing stuff. How do you get your hands into it, right? How do you sink the eagle talons into the flesh of this issue and control it and nurture it? Maybe pull it back a little bit in some areas or floor it, put the pedal to the metal. As long as you're going in the right direction and you've navigated your obstacles, or you have the ability to navigate the obstacles that are coming at you, it doesn't matter if you're traveling 1 mile an hour or at light speed. It doesn't. You'll just make it to your destination faster. The only thing that you risk by moving too quickly through life is not taking in the experience, right? What would be the point of being born as a baby and then within the next 60 seconds, you die, just like in the finale of 2001 A Space Odyssey. You're an old man dying with a monolith in front of you. You kind of intellectually know you lived the whole life that you were supposed to live in that 1 minute, but you know you missed it all. 99.99%. You missed the whole journey. Who were you at the end? Well, you're not quite sure. You can look at your hands. You can kind of see what attire you're wearing. Oh, I must have been a dignitary. Oh, I must have been a rocker. Whatever it was, right? So we owe it to ourselves to see life happen and to enjoy it. The good and the bad. But let's go back to each one of these layers here. Now, in terms of memory in general, you know, I'm just going to lightly mention, go see the episodes related to health, the toxin episode. Because the first thing you have to do is stop putting poisons in your body. That's really all I'm going to say. Go watch the episode for all the things that are toxins. I did miss one toxin, by the way, that I don't put on my body, which is I do not use antiperspirant. I use deodorant. But I am fortunate I don't sweat that much and I don't have horrible BO within 24 hours at least. But we have to make sure that we take care of the vessel, right? This symbiotic relationship we have, which I constantly talk about, the soul and the body. We've got to make sure that the body is as clean as it possibly can be. The second side of it is to make sure that anything that's nagging at you, that is consuming the electrical circuits in your body that keep your vessel in communication with the universe, have to be used according to your specifications. That sounds really esoteric, but let me just tell you. Imagine you had some piece of electric appliance, say a digital television, and instead of just leaving it on the TV stand and playing it, you take the back off and you just start throwing, you know, tinfoil flakes in there and you start just crossing wires. You know you're going to basically destroy the television. And the reason why you know that is that you're diverting electricity to places it shouldn't be. Putting too much electricity from the source to a circuit and just popping it. You are a very similar metaphorical thing to any electrical appliance. Everything that you eat, all the air that you breathe and metabolize into oxygen into your bloodstream, it is trying to create this battery of electricity that makes you function. If I am sitting there, like the scene in Dumb and Dumber where he says, you know, you want to hear the most annoying sound, and then they scream that crazy sound, that is interfering with your ability to process electricity in ways that are constructive. When you turn the fan on in your bathroom, it annihilates probably 50% of your brain's power to process individual data. So if you're ever in the morning and you're trying, you know, getting up in the morning and you're trying to analyze information because you're about to start your day, there's just something that's interesting to you, you're thinking about, right? And you turn that fan on. You're going to be struggling. It's like running through water to keep that consciousness as detailed and refined and as three-dimensional as it could have been had you left the fan off. Yeah, I understand. A lot of us have fans that if we don't turn them on, the whole place turns moldy. But just keep that in mind. When that thing's on, you are pausing your ability to absorb information. If you can open a window and find a different way to exhaust out all the steam, I'm serious. It's a big deal depending on how you manage your mornings. You'll find that people who listen to car stereos in the morning have a much shallower existence because the one, they're getting programmed by the radio, the media, you know, sort of MK Ultra box. But it's also blasting music at you or sound or talk radio or whatever. And maybe, you know, if you're listening to a blog or something like that, it's stimulating your mind. But just chattery advertising and music, whether or not it's great music or not, you're on vacation from intellectual thought. And believe me, you want to turn that stuff on when you've had too much. You've had so much thought your brain hurts and you're tired. You know, go ahead and turn the music on, wake yourself back up, have a good time. But I think you know what I'm saying. So once you've reached a point where you've detoxified and you're policing the interference circuits in your mind, and a human being could be an interference circuit. Someone is just chattering at you, wasting your goddamn time, telling you stories that have no endings, all that kind of stuff. Something of no value. Just filter it all out. And then you'll have a chance to start organizing how you put memories inside your mind. The thing I always tell people is everyone has a certain level of photographic memory, minus an accident, minus some drug overdose that might have blown out your mind, getting hit on the back of your head, minus those very specific events and ones like them. When I ask you about your childhood, usually you have a photographic memory that's engaging to recall your childhood. You see the first memory that you have because that's why you call it your first memory. You see being in a crib when you're young or walking, you know, awkwardly through the living room or when you're on the swing set and the thing hits you in the face or whatever it is. You have a photographic memory. My advice to you is to take that amazing mechanism that you're using to tell me about your childhood or whatever era of your life, right? And realize that's the same warehouse that you're going to put everything else you learn. And, you know, if I said, hey, what was it like to be in fifth grade? And you have, you know, some memories of fifth grade. It doesn't matter if I ask you when you're 25 or 85, you know, as long as you don't get sniff too many clouds out of planes, you'll be able to recall it. Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that teacher. Oh, she was great. Da, 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 da. Okay. Why is that so effortless? Why is recalling being a certain age so effortless? But when I say, you know, when was Lincoln shot? When was the Civil War? Now, obviously, you're only going to remember things that are interesting to you. And it's because you want to recall that. It's fun to you, right? You know, if you had a good date in your life with someone, you want to remember that one. If you've had a bad date, you want to forget that one. So it doesn't always have to be some huge peak or valley, but there's just information that's interesting to you. So I've said it on several episodes, but the very first thing you want to start practicing to either control your deep mind or to make a deep mind within yourself, because there is not a person who's hearing me right now that can't achieve a deep mind. Everyone can do it. You just have to understand what that is on a basic level and then move into it. And I'm just covering absolute Duplo level steps here, right? Big giant Legos is all I'm going to talk about in this episode. I'm barely going to get to any fine-tuning stuff. But let's talk about information intake as it pertains to memory, because that's a big deal. How do you take in data? I once fell for a speed reading thing on television in the 90s. It was this guy that, you know, said he could read pages really, really fast. And I bought his little, I don't know if it was a cassette tape. something like that. You know, his little workbook and stuff. And he did shake out of me a bad way I was looking at data input and put into me a new way of thinking about how to put in information into my mind. I personally have a belief that linear reading is the most atypical method of taking in data that human beings could ever be exposed to. And that means reading left to right or right to left, however you do it, but reading phonetically in lines is not natural for the brain. Because in nature, very little nature applies that way, right? We take in things in a 210 degree frustum of information about everything. Plus we have our other four senses that are taking in information, right? If you don't brush your fluoride, you'll get a sixth sense of your third eye feeling the world, more Gnostic input channels. But what he taught me was that you don't exactly have to look directly at a word to absorb it. You can look at a paragraph and move your eyes in a small circle, and believe it or not, your mind is so brilliant, it grabs the whole paragraph, puts it in your brain, and deciphers and reads it for you. And so if you're looking for the gist, if you need to skim a document quickly, and you do not have the time to ingest it, you can use this technique. Now, there's more English techniques you can use, which is to read the first sentence and perhaps the last sentence of every paragraph. If you really needed to get more, you know, scientific knowledge, someone's going to be asking you more detailed information about it. You know, if you're doing it for yourself, you can skim. If you're going to take a test or be questioned about the information, you better read the first and last sentences. But that's just a little trick of editorial organization. The first sentence is the reason why the paragraph exists, right? But the only reason why I tell you that is that there are different ways of taking in information much quicker. Again, most people have figured out that YouTube is an amazing university. There's just a million people making videos about absolutely everything. Now, you know, usually 9 out of 10 aren't your voice. They aren't the way that you would want to hear information. Once you find the person in the category you're trying to learn, speaking or videotaping things in a way that your brain really works well, stick with that person, subscribe to them, and listen to everything that they have, and then you'll get whatever discipline you're looking for, right? I'm going to give you an example of taking in data that should be pretty interesting. When you go to the movies and you see a professionally made film, some of you know this, some of you don't, but you're obviously looking at several different mediums coming together, several different senses coming together to create a fictional story in front of your mind. At the most basic level, someone wrote a script that is a story. And before the thing was ever turned into anything, before it was cast, before any sets are built, sound design comes in, there's a story. And those words on paper, if it's done properly, are so utterly compelling and powerful that I guarantee you the first three pages of that script, if not the first page, was so on target that someone in Hollywood greenlit the film. It doesn't mean that's what you actually see when the film gets created, because there are ignorant directors that have no writing background, and there's folks that fuck with things. But there's something about those words. They were chosen. There are people in Hollywood that do nothing but write dialogue. You know, and a particular movie might have seven different people rehashing the dialogue to make it more appealing to the masses, or to shrink it down and only appeal to one sector, which is extremely rare. But what's the next layer up? The next layer up is really creating the visuals. And this is created by obviously casting a whole group of actors that seem to work with the story, picking locations that actually work with the story, building out individual rooms and buildings and cars and whatever the hell needs to be made for this particular film. They're choosing the palette, almost like the colors, you know, in a palette when you become a painter. And then they film it. People say the words. There's a little bit of recording going on for sound. Most of the sound, though, the third layer, gets made by sound specialists who are doing musical scores. They're doing the Foley work, where they're doing all the little tiny sounds. They do audio dubbing for a lot of the voiceover. So you get this other dimension. And those three things are coming together to give you the single stream but you might say, is a movie. I saw this movie. But the average person doesn't separate all three. And there's way more than three dimensions. I'm just keeping it really simple. You know, there's the story, the eyeballs, and the ears. I want you to think about this analogy when you think about the information you take into your life or take from life into yourself to be categorized and filed away for hopefully a useful use, or, you know, whether or not it be entertaining use or some academic thing, or you're just a researcher trying to put connections together. You can't just take the grilled cheese sandwich and say, this is a grilled cheese sandwich. It's two pieces of bread, some butter, and some cheese. See it at a more intense level so that you can keep the attributes separate in your mind and use that as a mechanism to incorporate and correlate connections, right? I'll give you an example, because the next layer we're going to go up to is talking about how you can hone your connection mechanisms, right? I think I mentioned it the other day. There was a show on television called Connections a long time ago, and it's this British guy who did these brilliant jobs and of connecting stuff. And what he would do is he traced back history using connections of inventions that stood on the shoulders of other inventions. So he got all the way back to the beginning, where he would say, finding a quartz rock turned into a radio. And at the geological fundamental level, you're just digging a piece of quartz rock out of perhaps the Grand Canyon. And then you think about how the most advanced radio system in the world that'll rely on a little piece of quartz to pick up a signal, to do a little piezo effect, right? So here's why we have to do that movie thing. If I said to you, we have an illness that is going around, and you say, well, what are the symptoms? Well, it's weird, you know, when people eat a certain category of food and drink this water, they are okay, but if they drink a soda, they get sick. Right? And so you would go, oh, well, I can see the cause right away. It's the soda. Now, you know what? But we've also, they get sick when they drink orange juice. Man, orange juice and soda have nothing to do with each other, right? The way that these, you know, scenarios work in life where people are trying to find cures or they're trying to find the bug in something is that they're obviously taking all of the players in the experiment. And what they do is they explode them, and imagine like sort of a computer graphic where you might have like a car, and someone does a computer animation where they yank all the parts away from each other. So every nut and bolt and washer and wire and seat cover and everything is all floating kind of away from center, to the point that you could just sort of walk around it, you know, in a VR headset. You could see every single tiny unique piece. No two pieces are allowed to stay connected. They have to be pulled away from each other. That is you being able to see every attribute of the car. And when you explode things like that in your mind, you are then capable of looking at a different device, perhaps a stealth fighter. It's got the same exploding pattern. And you say, hey, there's some weird correlation. Both these machines are experiencing the exact same weird bug. See if you can find it. And immediately in your mind, you're like, well, I know what I'll do. I'll find the parts that are in this car that are also in the stealth bomber. But if you don't explode things into attributes, into little unique, distinct, discrete pieces, you will have no hope of making efficient connections, right? Now, there are, on the subject of connections, there are obviously plenty of conspiracy theories all over the internet. And we tend to gravitate to those narrators that have more knowledge about the respective sciences and obviously the ability to filter out pop science, but just to come at things from the most beautiful, myopic sort of Occam's razor approach to everything, where you cut away all the crap that is irrelevant and whatever's left that you must accept or deal with or filter, right? The problem is that a lot of these folks will be able to create more beautiful videos because they spend a lot of time cutting and pasting other people's content. They have nice voices, but they have very little knowledge. Or they're stuck in religious paradigms. And so you're trying to solve for a very non-religious thing, and you can't get out of it. But the problem is they've created such a mousetrap for your brain of pleasantries. It's pleasant to look at. It's pleasant to listen to this person's voice, that you can get trapped in it. You know, it doesn't mean they're trying to manipulate you. That doesn't mean they're evil. It just means that you have to be careful about how you take information in. But the quality of your brain taking in connections is going to be high if you can do it yourself versus having to take someone else's advice about the connections. One of the reasons why on this show I attempt to always slow down time and pull everything apart and explain things in the way that I think that, well, I think, you know, obviously I experience them this way, but maybe you too, is so that I can say, look, this isn't really my opinion about something. This is how I experience it personally. And if you experience it personally in the same manner, then perhaps this is why we're unique or alike, right? But the other thing about connections that's real important is you must have the courage to be wrong. But the beautiful thing about finding out that you're wrong typically means you've also found out at the exact same time that now you're right. Isn't that interesting, right? So I was talking about the neural net connection model, right? I think it's pretty easy to understand. You know, if I said someone connected, you know, gunpowder to a nuclear bomb, it's not a big stretch how you could see a bunch of little connections that go back to make that happen. It's just the way it works, right? But let's say you have a set of connections in your mind that has been true for you up to this point. And then you found, because you exploded something a little more efficiently, you found that when you looked at things with more parts and pieces, you found a contradiction in your own theory. Now, you still may have indicators beyond that point that make sense, right? We're missing all of the bones that would suggest that there's a, you know, direct correlation between monkeys and humans. There is no evidence that that's the case. There isn't. There's an insinuation, because there's similarities, but there's no direct proof, which is why we call it the missing link, right? But once we get to Homo sapiens sapien, we can then look at how we've evolved and make analysis that's correct. And we can also go back to the hominids and cave animals and monkeys and see how they put together, or how they're put together, but to mix it together, it doesn't work. But now if you're an evolutionist who pulls your head out, you will go do your anthropological research and find out that there is no proof yet that the two are connected. So you found out that you're wrong. So the little connection on the circuit has to be broken because you don't have proof. If you really talk to intense anthropologists, they will absolutely convince you there's no link on a genetic level, despite the similarities, right? But what you've immediately done is clarified the connection map in your brain. You now know where you were wrong. Great. Well, you know, sometimes there's only one other choice or two other choices. It's either or. When you have an either or, you are in a blessed situation because you just flicked the switch to the other node and then you're right. Then the information in your brain is cool and refreshing and true. Now, it's pretty rare that there's just a binary choice, but it does happen. I just want you to feel that inside your mind. And that when we're in software and you find a bug, it's when you're a rookie, it's a humdrum, hang your head low, shameful moment. When you're an adult, doesn't matter how old you are, but in your mind, when you become a pro at it, it's a joyous occasion because you can now go find a bug and squash it, and then your stuff is just that much tighter. But now let's go to the advanced level of this conversation. How many times have you been afraid because you were at a physical location in your life where you felt like you were in danger? Feeling like you're in danger is usually the result of having things be out of your control. You're in a rowdy nightclub. You're coming out of a concert and there's a rowdy parking lot. You're by yourself and it's dark at a location of which you've never been, so you have no memory or suggestion as to where the steps are, where the, you know, I don't know where the cliff is. And so you are saying, this is frustrating that I'm scared because I know how to handle information if I have it. If I knew who was too drunk in the parking lot to deal with and who was not too drunk to deal with, I would simply navigate a path in my brain, a bunch of waypoints to get to my car around the crazies. You would turn the light on in a house that's dark. You'd carry a torch to supply more information so you'd know where you are. You feel me, right? Okay. The beautiful thing about intellectual exploration of any subject matter you might get involved in, whether it be your own little tiny thoughts, you don't need a YouTube video, you do not need a web page, and you don't need a book. To just sit, lie down, be by yourself, drive a car, and just have your mind accelerate down some crazy Doctor Who tunnel, of which it's terrifying and exhilarating all at the same time. The beautiful thing about amusement park rides is that they're constructed to be exactly this, to provide a visual escape so you no longer feel like you're at a particular location besides the theme park that you're at. And you can trust them that there's not a bunch of, you know, blood dripping off of the rails and ambulances or paddy wagons taking the people who died before you. You're safe. And so that's what we pay for. You know, they spend, you know, anywhere from $250 million to $1 billion on some of these rides so that you and I can have these incredible experiences. Well, you can do this with your research and your own mind. Just make sure and get something that's durable. I think things are more like books are a lot better. But you're going to want to track what you're doing the more that you are starting out this process, because you're going to be potentially overwhelming your mind and you might feel like you're being forgetful because you're simply taking new information and putting it in the slots that had the previous information. Another thing you can do is get a dictaphone or, you know, get an app on your telephone that lets you talk into your phone and record sequences, right? You'd be amazed at what you can do with your mind by simply stacking up what you understand today and then going to the next level and the next level and the next level each subsequent day. A lot of times you will feel that there's a push. There's this almost Gnostic push where someone is saying, you need to go in this direction. You need to research this. You know, sometimes it'll be, you need to move here. Depending on where your life is at that moment and how drastic it is, it's much better when you can just sit at home and think. That's what your Gnostic instinct is telling you. But the very first time you pursue an instinct inside yourself, and then you succeed in finding something that enlightens you for the rest of your life, and I'm telling you, it doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be a teeny tiny thing, and it will totally change your life. And once you do it by yourself without someone, you know, breathing down your neck, without an assignment from school or from work or for someone else, you find just a nugget of truth. It is so liberating. It's so uplifting because in the end, you did that. You were the one that discovered that. And then you will realize you have a talent. You probably have a deep mind. Regardless, you know, I don't know if there's any levels to deepness. I'm sure there are levels. But once you start researching and coming up with interesting answers to things and theories about things, because, you know, a lot of times you don't have the information to fully conclude, but you got a lot of information to get to the next level. When you hear Neil deGrasse Tyson or a science guy lecture you about what truth is, there's a huge laugh that comes out of your system to say, look at these guys trying to convince me, just like preachers who created this fake book about original sin, so then they could extort the relationship out of you with money, donations, and a bunch of stuff so that you could get to God, right? That's what these personalities are on television. You can't access the truth unless you go through one of these blowhard proxies. That is bullshit. You have 100% ability to go find the truth by yourself or with a group of people that are like-minded, open-minded, good memories, good connection mechanisms, and good powers of deduction once they get there. Now let's talk about the act of talking to someone else who has a deep mind like you. I will tell you that in my own experience of really diving deep into thinking and existing and researching and concluding and theorizing and correcting and all this other stuff, that I can have conversations with individuals that are rewarding on sort of an incidental level. because I like people of all walks of life, you know. But there are people that I talk to, like my writing mentor, where I sit down and have a deep conversation. And I will tell you that it is like, you know, you've seen light bulbs when the power is kind of going up and down and the filament has just enough electron current to be illuminating just a little bit. You can kind of see, if you turn all the lights out, you can barely see that the filament's on. And that's you talking to someone that's not really contributing much to your overall purpose in life. But when you talk to someone who's deep like you, that bulb turns on and it turns bright and it turns into the sun. You can't even see the bulb anymore. You're just seeing a big ball of light. And contrary to the way light bulbs work, where they're built to blow up, this thing just keeps getting brighter. And you feel amazing. Your chest feels amazing. And when I get done talking to him, my mentor, I feel like I've been alive for the first time in days, if not weeks, if not months. And I just want to sit there all day. And just, we can talk about absolutely anything, but when we do, we just jump in at a metaphysical level of all thinking. You know, studying, if it's about film, you know, studying all the genres that have been popped out lately. We'll talk about the generational uniquenesses between age brackets and people who've had a certain experiences, and then we get into sort of the philosophical level of a particular script. It just is wonderful, it's creative. It's not where we're not living in a world of complete unknowns. We're actually comparing our knowns or our opinions about the knowns. The reason I want to sort of close closer to this community discussion is that, and most of you know this because I'll say this much. For those of you who are strictly on the podcast solution for this particular show, and you get most of your information in a podcast, I'm going to suggest that you may live in a more isolated instance of taking information in. And there's nothing wrong with that if that works for you. You don't have to have a bunch of buddies and a bunch of friends. You may be a person who doesn't like being with, you know, you get nervous around other folks or whatever because you're so analytical, being around them is too much for you. That's fine. But you may experiment if you don't have those limitations and kind of getting out and talking to folks, right? And maybe just talk to one other person. If crowds bother you, that's fine. Just talk to one other person. And you'll find that the amount that you can get from two people is really, it's an order of magnitude. It is you to the power of them, them to the power of you, right? It's like 2 times 2. You know, 10 to the power of 10 is more than 10 plus 10. So it's not just the two of you. You are multiplying times each other. It's crazy. For those of you on YouTube, typically most of you will at least chime in every once in a while and put a comment in, looking for some sort of validation, some sort of communing with someone else who's like you. And for those of you who get really into it and comment, you know, you drive the show. You give it a backbone. Now, there is a sort of cautionary tale that comes with the deep mind. It has been one of the most acidic patterns in history when it comes to folks that achieve deep minds and how they are received by the world. And I, you know, obviously didn't live in these eras, but it can be a little alarming that the prize for being informed or analytical, or perhaps you could say smart, is that the mob can feel intimidated and the mob can turn against you. Turn against those who have labored to become intelligent, labored to become enlightened, to see more. Now, sometimes it's endorsed by the native culture. You know, Dresden, Germany was a location where they said that, you know, most of the most artistic, interesting, thought-provoking thinkers of the world had sort of congregated to build a city where it was a city of deep minds that worked together. And again, there was musical disciplines, mathematical disciplines, writing disciplines. Everything that was considered amazing and unique about humanity was in that city. And they firebombed the shit out of the place, destroying it. And at the same time, destroying a lot of the intellectual genetic pool of Germany. Now, there may be a little bit of romance to that tale than truth. I wasn't there. But I've heard that from several different sources in my lifetime. The Chinese, under Mao Zedong, they went after everyone who was intelligent and farmed up reasons. You know, first I think it was the landlords that got murdered, and then it was just anyone who made another person feel uncomfortable. They could do the body snatcher's point, and you were hurled out into the street and beheaded in front of gigantic crowds that were so happy that the bell curve on the test had just gone down considerably. And now China is paying the price for that today as they try to re-engineer creativity from a lost era. Like, no one would ever contest that China had at least a really good set of creative human beings putting together their architecture, their art, the dragons, their rituals, their burial rituals, their marital rituals. But my friends who live there, my friends who visit there, and my American expats who live there, all say that it's a pretty decent conversation that for the last 10, 20 years, they've been trying to get Europeans and get Americans over there to teach creativity. And they're getting it. They are getting it. There's new kids out there, but they're not able to monetize it as much into the stream of China because China is so controlled by its government, right? And the agenda of China's government is obviously much more functional and military than creative, or it's more industrial. But you have leaders like Pol Pot, right? He killed everyone because they had glasses. And he just thought people with glasses are more intellectual. I don't know how bad eyesight makes us smart, but that was his philosophy, and he killed them off. And this has happened over and over and over again. And how does it happen? Well, I can only personally think of two possible scenarios. One is serendipitously happens that people get smart and people don't. People get deep, people don't. People see more, people see less. It's all just happenstance. It just happens. I can't vouch for that one. The only one I could vouch for is people who learn things covet. They hold their information in to make sure that no one else gets ahead. And then you have room for the rationale of getting rid of people that do that. You know, the people that run the world have a lot more answers to things than we do. We know they do. We suspect that there are, you know, serums and injections for nearly every single ailment in the world that they have access to, that they labored to create, that they hoarded and coveted. Okay. And we're not very happy about that as deep thinkers, right? If I could give you a little red button and you push that and everyone who's coveted and hoarded information away from society had a cardiac arrest and died, I bet we could find a lot of takers to push that button. Because then we get the information released to us, supposedly, in some mechanism. But the solution, the real solution for this deep mind commitment is to do what you can to encourage people to think. Now, one might think, okay, well, really, really one of the best things you could do is to get kids to think. And I would say, yes, that's actually probably the very best thing you can do. But by God, until a child hits the road with their own feet, paying their own bills, getting their own thing together, they don't affect the world as much as adults do. Adults write articles in newspapers, they stand in front of, you know, teleprompters, they start giant companies, they make YouTube videos that people listen to, because I guess with age comes credibility. So it's really splashing on everyone, because it's all part of a movement, part of an idea, and ideas are very hard to kill. And I'm going to bring back an analogy that should help sort of separate the exercise of thinking and not thinking, going deep or not going deep, working in these areas to give yourself more depth and not doing it. And it's all in moderation, right? You can't just sit and think and think and think, probably at Einstein's level or Tesla's level, forever. You know, you got to take a break every once in a while. Go lay out by the pool. the analogy I came up with a long time ago, which seems to work really, really well, is that there are two types of people, or I should say two states of mind, I should say, more than types of people, that we get into. Think of a concert, a musical concert of any kind that you like. The performers are up on stage. They have labored to bring you an experience. They've learned how to play their instruments. Perhaps there's a vocal in there. Perhaps there's a story attached to it. And then there's the spectators that are in the audience that are enjoying the fruits and the bounties of these performers on stage. Now, we know that the performers on stage don't sit up there forever. They learn something, they play it, they go off and practice, and then they go to concerts themselves, and they sit in the crowd and they watch their other friends play. And it's this beautiful circle of taking turns of entertaining each other, right? I'm going to suggest, on an intellectual level, on a thinking level, on a depth level, this is what we do. When we're on stage, we are looking for something new. We're trying to go deep. We're trying to reanalyze, again, studying all the attributes of something, finding correlations, memorizing them, trying to determine whether or not we need to change some of the little logic gates in our minds. Well, this wasn't right. I get a better results when I go here. Don't worry about personal judgment in the middle of this experience. Who freaking cares? Right? You imagine how funny it would be if you had sort of a MacGyver or MacGruber, depending on which one you've seen in your lifetime, where the guy is trying to create a solution out of, you know, the hodgepodge crap in the house. You know, it's like, give me a paperclip, a rubber band, and a cat, and I'll get this safe unlock sort of thing, right? What if the comedic reaction was that the second the guy fails, he goes into such a self-loathing, you know, death spiral of feeling like he was a loser that he talks to himself and goes into his full psychosis about himself and doesn't continue moving forward with trying to disarm the bomb, and then he dies, right? He's like a depressed MacGyver or something. That seems silly, hopefully, to you, and it should seem silly for you to persecute yourself for getting anything wrong in life, like, I'm just researching. Who cares? A genius finds what's wrong in their own belief systems, in their own philosophies, and whatever documentation they were given, and the documentation they create on top of that. The algorithm of haves and have-nots is a real one. It's manipulated at some points in time, and it is real at other points in time. We have to make sure that information that we gain is freely accessible from anyone that wants the information. And I think once you feel confident at a certain level with the information that you've discovered up to a certain point, try to get into a forum where you can share it. Because as much as you might say, well, it's my idea, I don't want someone else, you know, figuring out the last part of the equation and I lose my fame. Well, today with the internet, you can definitely prove that you got it all the way up to a certain point, and you will get credit. You know, there's a reason why Nobel Prizes are handed out to multiple men at the same time and women at the same time, because they, as a group, moved it to different levels, stood on each other's shoulders until someone looked over the wall and said, there it is, DNA, you know. I think that's it. I hope you feel me on this one. It's a bit a little shy of an hour. That's fine. I hope it's obvious that this stuff is really important. That we improve the mind of man. Try not to believe any story or any claim that you're not supposed to be intellectual because God is in some pissing contest with man. I watched this video the other day that was just the most god-awful, insulting video to any notion of a creator, where this guy was trying to read the Bible to everyone and say, you see what happens when, it's a Tower of Babel, right? You see what happens when man tries to challenge the wisdom of God or tries to learn how God works or be smarter than God. God comes down and punishes you. Man, that's an IQ test. Everyone's failing if you believe that bullshit. Again, remember my commitment to not being a trivial human being. To follow that notion. Stay stupid. That's what the Bible says. Stay stupid. And this is only certain people's interpretations, mind you. It's absolutely not. The very technology that this guy used to go through YouTube, right, would not have existed because someone could have demonized learning about electrons. You don't want to learn how God does what he does, man. This is purely secular between us and the universe and each other. Try to leave it as a primitive, beautiful thing, and you will live a charmed life. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. There's video if you're on audio, audio if you're on video. There's a locked Facebook group if you're interested. It's on iTunes, it's on vid.me, and it's on Google Play. So get up there and take a look. Remember, Deep Thoughts Radio. That's the distinction. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.